You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Taking up the story for the knowledge that we seek,
broadening horizons into it. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Modern Myth. My name is Tristan Boyle, aka the Anarchaeologist, and we are today have a very special guest. I am talking to an archaeologist from Nigeria. Now, fans of the show may remember that back in 2020, I also spoke with a different archaeologist from Nigeria, and I'm hoping this time around to have some really interesting questions to be able to shine a light on archaeology in parts of the world that don't always get headline attention, but definitely should. So first, Sammy, thank you very much for coming to speak to us. And why don't you introduce yourself, let our listeners know a little bit about you. What do you currently do?
Hello, everyone. My name is Funam Samson Cass, Nigerian archaeologist. Presently, I'm a civil servant. I work with the National Commissions for Museums and Monuments. And I teach archaeology at the Institute of Archaeology and Museum Studies in Jos. The Institute of Archaeology and Museum Studies in Jos is an arm of the National Commissions for Museums and Monuments in Nigeria. Yeah, so the National Commissions for Museums and Monuments is the body that oversees archaeology and culture and heritage and stuff that has to do with all of that. Yeah, so basically my role in my place of work is teaching archaeology to museum professionals from across Nigeria, but I do a lot of field archaeology as well. I'm a field archaeologist. Yes, so that's basically it.
Excellent. And how long have you been an archaeologist then?
Oh, I've been an archaeologist since 2012. I graduated from Ahmadu Bello University here in Nigeria to be in archaeology 2012. So basically, that was when I started practicing archaeology in the museum. 2001, junior level admin staff. In fact, that was what made me curious about archaeology, the museum and how it functions, made me curious about archaeology because I worked in the admin department. I worked in the craft shop within the museum in Kaduna. So I became more and more, I worked in the gallery also. I became more and more curious as to how the museum functions. So it prompted me to pursue a degree in archaeology. So I've been in the museum sector since 2001. And then I joined archaeology about 6 years later. That was in 2007. And I graduated in 2012. And so I've been practicing archaeology since then, since 2012.
It's so nice to hear such a lovely story, because I'm of the belief that there are many routes into archaeology. There's not just one set defined way of getting in. And for me, curiosity is so important. To me, that resonates very heavily, because I stumbled into archaeology when I was at university. I was doing one degree and then I switched. But it was the curiosity that actually drew me in and made me think, actually, I need to take the archaeological route. I need to go and do that. That's fantastic. And you said you did a degree in archaeology and then graduated. What is it that I know you said you had a curiosity about the museum and how it worked and everything, but is there something specific, maybe even like from why you even started doing the administration stuff, why was it a museum that attracted you? Is there something you can think of that like that really captured your imagination?
Yes, while in the museum, I started work in the museum as a junior level staff without a degree, no degree of any kind. I had just a certificate from I had a certificate in marketing from the Polytechnic in Zaria, in the city where I live in Kaduna State, here in Nigeria. So it's a low-level certificate. It's not a degree. So that was what I got my first job with in the museum. Yeah, so I got the job and I started working as an admin staff. I worked in the gallery, I worked in the craft shop, virtually departments of the museum. Yeah, so it was just fate that took me there. It wasn't as if I planned to be there and stuff, but I needed a job to like get myself together and then live my life like that. And again, I needed to go back to school. So I had the opportunity of studying whatever I liked. Initially, my dream course was agriculture because I was always about solving problems and I was like, oh, every human's got to eat. So let me do something that will beneficial to humanity. So I actually wanted to study agriculture. So, but when I found myself in the museum space, here in Nigeria, archaeology, I think, is the core discipline because we don't have any degrees in, say, museology, for instance. Yeah, you closest to museum. I thought, why not? So I had to wait for a few years to be qualified to, because I didn't want to just go out there and like go back to school and lose my job. So I had to wait for a few years confirm, because I was appointed on the promotion for a few years, got confirmation, and I had to wait for 5 years before I was qualified for study leave. And then I went to school and I was reabsorbed into the system after my degree. Like, basically, I think that's just it. It's just a...
I was just thinking, what is it like? How is archaeology and history like looked at in Nigeria? Because when I had my previous conversation with Ajay, he had said that like archaeology is not necessarily seen as like a, it's not a superstar career. It's seen as something that some people do, but doesn't really capture a lot of imagination because people try and think about, oh, well, no, I should start a business or I should do like agriculture engineering or something. How do you feel that people nowadays look at archaeology and history and things in Nigeria?
What Ajayi told you actually true? Yeah, because like in the class of, say, because we have a lot of archaeologists, like student archaeologists, that I think a great percentage, not up to 5% of graduates of archaeology proceed to study archaeology. Well, these days, the awareness is more than it used to be in the past. Mm-hmm. But you say, maybe for instance, the class of 100, you'd be hardly find 10 people that actually applied to study archaeology. For the people that you find that apply to study archaeology are maybe whose parents are archaeologists, or people like me that come from within the museum sector that want to really study archaeology. But aside that, you find out that in the university, because the way the university system in Nigeria works, if maybe your preferred course is not given to you to study, you may be given an alternative. So you find out that most people that study archaeology are transferred from other departments. They didn't really apply to study archaeology in the first place. So yeah, and archaeology is not popular because one, for the job opportunities after school. So most people that get transferred from other departments to archaeology just want to study and just earn a degree and go do other things with their lives. So you find only very few. Like, for instance, in my class that graduated, let me see, how many of us practice archaeology? Do I have any colleague in my class that practice? Okay, I have one. Just one other one that I know practice archaeology. Okay, another one works within a university, because in Nigeria, until recently, that things started getting, some changes started happening within the archaeology sector. Yeah, the only job you could get was to become a teacher. That's after graduating with a degree. You want to go back. Only very few of us will go back. Say maybe in the, like in my postgraduate class, because I'm currently running a master's program at Ahmadu Bello University in Zaria, where I graduated from. We're just like 8 in my class. You can imagine. I know in my first degree, we were like 100 plus, but in the postgraduate class, we're just 8. And in fact, you've had postgraduate classes that were just maybe 2 or 3 5, like that. So a lot of people who just want to study archaeology to earn a degree and go work in a bank, go work elsewhere, yeah, and just do other things. Yes. So that was it. Archaeology is actually very unpopular here.
That is interesting. That's really interesting, actually, that like it's almost like it's a stepping stone to other things. But obviously, I think coming from, like, I currently live in the UK. I grew up in Northern Ireland. And I think we've got a very mixed connection to archaeology, in my opinion, because on the one hand, if you go to any museum in Britain, it's not just going to have British artifacts, and it's going to have artifacts from all around the world. But the other side of it is that the view of archaeology is that it's these eccentric people who go off and they dig something, and it's a bit of fun and everything. But the actual reality is that archaeologists, when they work in the UK, the pay isn't always the best. The conditions are difficult. You're expected to hop from site to site, and you have to travel around the country sometimes. And what happens is occasionally, you know, there's no jobs, and then suddenly there's a boom and everybody needs archaeologists. But because there was no jobs for so long, they didn't have all the archaeologists that were working left. So there's a difference between how the public sees archaeology and what archaeologists do and the reality of the actual sector. Do you find that similar in Nigeria? Like, people don't really know what you do, but they have this idea.
Oh, yes, I think people don't really know what we do, because most times when we go out to the field, most archaeological sites, except a few, are actually in remote locations. Now, we have very few urban archaeological sites where you want to just have the archaeological sites within developed areas. So when you go to the site, even within the urban areas, like, for instance, I told you I was in Benin for a project. Yes, people around that are not archaeologists would be like, what are you looking for? And maybe when with my dirty clothes on site, and my friends and would be like, oh, have you found the gold? So there's that misconception that we're looking for precious stuff. Yes, what we're looking for is is invaluable. Yeah, but they expect that, they think we're geologists. They mistake us for geologists like that. And they're like, the case in the UK, yes, I understand that before you embark on any development projects that involves you digging the ground, an archaeologist to do archaeology before you can do that, yes. But that's not the case here. We've not had that kind of laws put in place. Yes, well, I hope, hopefully someday, because there are urban centers that actually spring up, like our capital city, Abuja, for instance. Fast rising, it's just the boom in Abuja is less than, say, 20 years, and there are a lot of archaeological sites that have been missed in that area because a lot of construction, roads and what have you. And even presently, there are a lot of, say, real projects going on, but you don't find archaeologists doing archaeology before embarking on any development projects, except for recently in Benin, where the Museum of West African Art, MOA, coming up, because it's an international project, so it requires for archaeology to be done before the museum is built. In fact, we worked with some colleagues from the UK, yeah, from Cambridge, and in the course of the project, I did a little training in the UK. I've been to a few museums in the UK, by the way. I've been to the British Museum in London.
Yeah.
I've been to Fitzwilliam's in Cambridge. I've been to Pitt Rivers in Oxford as well, McDonald's in Cambridge, McDonald's Institute, the McDonald's Museum of Anthropology and Archaeology in Cambridge. I see a different thing. Well, every of those museums have their different vibes and stuff like that. So, but the concept, how the people view the museum here is totally different from how the Europeans in general view the museum, because a lot of people do not really value cultural materials. I think maybe we've accepted Christianity and Islam being the major religion. So it's unfortunate, but a lot of Nigerians see archaeological materials as being fetish, as being not important. What are you looking for that? You know, and meanwhile, they don't understand that archaeology goes beyond that. Even if you don't find a whole artifact, the the stratigraphy in which is buried, the soil can tell you a whole lot about the past, you know, the people that live in the past, and a whole lot of information from that, valuable information that can even shape the future, can be obtained through archaeology, can find information that can even change some of the narrative. But now people have embraced Christianity and Islam and view those things as fetish, so really value them a lot. So like that, only a few people now know about this one, because come on, archaeologists, come on, who does that? You understand? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's that kind of mindset is very popular here. So
that's really fascinating. I want you to hold on to that thought, and we'll actually talk a little bit more about that after this break. And we are back here on Modern Myth, and I'm speaking with Sammy about how different people look at archaeology in different parts of the world, and specifically Nigeria. Now, I really wanted to take on board what you were saying previously about how people look at archaeology. And I'm just wondering, obviously, Africa was colonized by European countries and subsequently gained independence. But during the time that they were colonized, there were always like influences and directions taken where Nigerians weren't necessarily the ones dictating what history was, or they weren't taking an interest in the deep history of the people living there. Do you feel that, like, how do you feel? What do you think about the power of archaeology to bring that information to people? And do you think there's a way to present it to people that, like, will capture their imagination?
Oh, yes. I think archaeology has the power to do that. And if I may use this kind of vocabulary, say, for instance, public archaeology is one of my core research interests. Yeah, to just like what you're doing in your own way. Yeah, it's public archaeology. So I try to leverage on public archaeology to bring archaeology to the public. Yes, yeah, so a lot can be done and needs to be done to bring archaeology to the limelight, because like in the project I told you about in Benin, we engaged the public. Yeah, so while you're in the pits digging, we have school children, committee leaders, people from us, journalists come, and then we have a chit-chat with them, try to explain what we're doing. In some instances, we even give them like first-hand feel of the thing. Oh, have the trowel, dig, scrape, and do stuff, sieve, and have a feel of it, be an archaeologist for some time. That's a wonderful initiative, but I think more needs to be done in aspects of, we need to leverage on the internet media, you know, maybe through storytelling about myths, because there's, for instance, there's this Polish hand axes, the small ones. When people come across them, maybe in their farms while farming, they say it's thunderstone. They believe it has happened to that place when thunder strikes and it gets to the ground, not knowing that it's an artifact. Oh, this must have been that people used in the past. So to demystify that kind of myth, you know, and let people know the importance of these things about how the history has been made, and these things are actually stuff that were done by people in the past, and how even try to understand how they do them, because we're worse off than the people that did some of these things. You wonder the kind of technology they had, the kind of knowledge that has there, because in some aspects of Nigerian archaeology, there's a missing link, there's a broken link, like in some of the earliest cultures, for instance, like the Nok. I don't know if you've heard about the Nok culture. Yeah, so people responsible for the Nok civilization, scholars say there's a link because the Nok culture, some say disappeared, but while some maintain that it declined at some point, and so but there are people living in these areas today that do not have a direct link with the makers of the artifacts, because their elaborate artifacts have been discovered there, the artistic, you know, with elaborate hairstyles, distinct features. You have them across Nigeria, west, north, and have so many cultures like that. So but there's some areas in the south and the southwest, like the Benin, there have been links between the makers of the Benin bronzes and the Benin empire that flourished and the inhabitants of that area today. But in some areas that dates back, like way, way back, like to say maybe 2,000 years, there is no link. But you see these things and you're fascinated about their make. These people didn't have they are not as advanced technologically as we are today, but they're able to make these things. There's a certain piece I've come across. It's iron, but it's a figurine, a human head, life size, with hairstyle like braids on it, and it's pure iron, like steel. I'm like, oh, who made this? How were they able to make this, like, way back in time? But the person that owned it wants to sell it. And some other people that come across artifacts, they just want to sell it and make money off it in a hurry. So they're not really concerned about it. They can just take it out of archaeological context and just try and look for the next person to. But because a lot of people have contacted me in the past about, oh, I have this artifact, you're an archaeologist, I want to sell. Even last year in Benin, someone contacted me with some Manila, it was a picture, I don't know if it's iron or bronze or whatever, but they contacted me that they want to sell it. Illegal, you can only donate or contact the museum. If the museum is willing to acquire, fine. If they're not willing to acquire, you need to become the custodian and stuff like this because they're valuable. And taking it out of archaeological context makes it lose its academic value per se, because wherever these things are found, are areas that can be researched, more information gotten from it if properly done by trained archaeologists.
Do you know, we have that same problem in the UK with a lot of metal detecting. And I've actually been asked by somebody I know, Tristan, where are the treasure maps? Can you send me the maps so I can go and metal detect and just find the treasure? You saying that about how people look at history in Nigeria, but it's very much the same here as well. It really makes sense that in both countries, there's still this kind of idea that there's these treasures that are fixed prices and you can go and sell them and everything. It's like, yeah, I find that very difficult to deal with apart from them. Yeah.
So, but okay, for instance, for in the UK, for instance, you go metal hunting and stuff like that. I think it's legal for you to do that. There's this small antiquities projects. Yeah, that permits you to do that.
It's actually not legal in Ireland and the north of Ireland. It's actually forbidden. In England and Scotland and Wales, it is legal, but you're expected to report it to the local county archaeologist. But trying to get people to report it is difficult as well. And like in the UK, they've tried these schemes called the Portable Antiquity Scheme. Yeah. And in Scotland, it's called Treasure Trove, where there's actually a finder's fee given to people. When they hand something in, there's like a monetary reward for handing it in as well that the government has like money for. So it sometimes feels that like you don't want to encourage people who wouldn't have gone and dug things out to go and get that, to get the money. But on the other hand, you need to find a way. If somebody's got it, how do you get them to like put it in the museum rather than just like keep it on a shelf?
Yeah, I understand that. Like the Small Antiquities Project now, I think it is, to a great extent, it has helped solve some of these problems that you just want to take it off and just go sell it illegally. And don't forget that, yes, we have sites that are rich in, say, maybe metals, because they are like in the site of Nok, yeah, there's industrial scale, there's evidence of industrial scale iron working in that area. In Benin, again, you have the bronzes, you know, but like in other parts, you have mainly pottery and terracotta. In Ife, for instance, you have wonderful, very well preserved, like, pottery pavement made of pottery and stone, and we've lasted like dates of say maybe 11th century, yeah, because like in Ife, for instance, the community, the whatever civilization happened in that place was very prosperous, because you have these pottery pavements like all around, and the skill, like the skill at which you have the pottery pavement and the stone pavement, is makes you wanna imagine the quantity of pottery that must have gone into making, because they are not flat laid. They are not flat laid now, they are edge laid. So you can imagine laying, say, maybe 1 centimeter of pottery to cover a whole city. Wow, that's enormous. There must have been a very vibrant pottery industry within that area. Well, some maintain that the pottery was imported from somewhere. Different narratives, but well, the bottom line is, well, whoever did this was very prosperous. At that time, he did.
For people not familiar with that kind of style of pottery, is it like, what materials is it made of? It, like, what colors are on it? Does it have, when you find pottery sherds and stuff like that, does it have designs and stuff on it?
Oh, yes, we have a lot of designs, and the designs help us understand in some areas, knowledge transfer, technology, because the earliest forms of pottery come with little decorations, while later ones are even more finer and more elaborate, you know, decorations, trying to tell you that whoever started making this improved in their craft, actually got some ideas from somewhere.
What form are the decorations?
Oh,
how do they look?
Oh, you have incisions, you have some patterns. Some very well. Presently, I'm working with Professor Albert Kosley, the British Academy Global Professor. So he's doing museum archaeology, and I spend a whole lot of time in the museum here within the storage. We're trying to look at museum objects from within the store. We're trying to do archaeology from the storage now, not necessarily going to the site. So we deal with a whole lot of pottery. Like today, for instance, there's a colleague who's not an archaeologist, and I was like, oh, so this is what you, because we took out a box with a whole lot of pottery in it, and they had some wonderful designs, incisions, rollets, different patterns. So some of these patterns now will tell you that, oh, whatever was used to stamp to make these designs was actually very well crafted, because the precision now, the precision of the designs, how it is beautifully made, some were even like notched, and different kinds of designs, different patterns, very beautifully made. It's just unfortunate that most of it is not whole. It's just the shirts now that we did. And don't forget that some of these excavations were done as far back as 1944 by British archaeologists.
Yeah.
By British archaeologists. I think the foremost one we have here is Bernard Fagg. The museum here in Jos, I think, is one of this is the first purpose-built museum, not just a structure that was converted to a museum. Because a lot of tin mining activities happened around here, and people started coming across these terracotta figurines. Whenever they come across these terracotta figurines, they either destroy it, or some started collecting and using it as scarecrow in their farms. That was when it made him to start, Bernard Fagg, to start collecting this stuff, and they built a museum here in 1952 to house the objects from the Knock area and the plateau as well. And in fact, during the course of this work we do in the store of the museum here, we've come across a whole lot of lithic materials. Yeah, because there are a lot of, the Jos area is rocky area. You have a lot of rocks in the Jos. I think it's the most rocky. Well, the second highest elevation in Nigeria, but it has more rocks than any other place. So there was a flourishing Stone Age civilization within this area. Yes, because you have like hundreds of thousands of microliths and cores and bifaces. One massive one yesterday that measured a biface, a hand axe that measured 45 cm long. Yeah, that's massive. The width was about 20 centimeters or 25, I can't remember, but the length was like 45 cm long. So you can imagine how it made me curious as, must have been a giant that used this, or they had a giant in their midst, or did they use it for heavy digging? Makes you want to ask a whole lot of questions. But since I'm not a lithic specialist, I just took the picture and shared it with one of my senior colleagues who is a lithic specialist. to give insights about.
It's absolutely fascinating, and it sounds like it's people get a guided idea when they see you doing archaeology as to the value of it. And I think that's something that I'm very well aware of when I'm thinking about public archaeology. I think that's something that's very close to my heart as well. And I think it's really valuable that archaeology is not always about telling, but also doing and facilitating and like showing what it is rather than just listing it off. I just want to quickly, to round out this kind of segment of the show, I was wondering, when you were talking earlier about how people treat artifacts and stuff, have there been times when you've had to not let people know about the archaeology you're doing because there is a concern that people might try and come and take things from a particular site you're working on?
Not really. Like, unlike the case in the UK, when you have your archaeological projects on hush, you don't publicize it. Yes, even here, we're told not to post stuff on Facebook because, like in the UK, if you let someone know that, oh, this is an archaeological site, they'll be trooping in the night, come with their metal detectors and then start doing stuff. I think that was the story we got in one of the quarry sites close to Cambridge that did that kind of narrative. But here in Nigeria, community engagement before even embarking on archaeology. Like, for instance, one of the projects I was volunteering in the summer of last year, I think July, August, with Professor Akin Ogundiran in Ede, had one of the areas that were initially supposed to research. Then we moved to another area where he had worked like 20 years ago. Now, we got talking with the chief of the town, and he's a PhD actually, so he knows the value and gave us his permission and his blessings to go on with our work. So with that kind of permission now, that kind of access, we have little problems on the surface because the king now, the chief, has given us permission because he knows the value. But now well, this area is abandoned, it's presently used as for farming. But the people around there now, what are you looking for? What is archaeology? You know, so now you take your time to explain to them that, oh, this is what we do, about history of our forefathers, of our ancestors and stuff. Even though we entered someone's farm, they weren't happy, we had to compensate them and stuff like that. But, oh, at the end of the day, they were pleased that we're going to revamp their culture, and then tell their stories and get to find stuff that their ancestors did. It's a source of pride for them. So when they have that kind of narrative, we get receptive, we're welcomed when you do it properly. But in other cases, some people think you're digging for gold or any precious item, most especially in areas where there are deposits of these solid minerals. They think you're going for their gold, like they want to be hostile to you, they want to be friendly, they want to ask you to pay them before you can even go ahead with your research. We've had that kind of encounter also. It's not all friendly, all true. Sometimes you have this kind of issues here.
That can make it, I can understand how that makes it difficult. And again, it's like, yeah, I can totally understand that. I'm just going to wrap up this. Friends, I'm going to wrap up this segment and we are going to be back in just a moment. And welcome back to this episode of Modern Myth. Now, we've talked a lot about how Nigeria and the people of Nigeria look at archaeology and how different there's challenges and barriers there when working inside the country to figure out different things. But I actually want to take this section to look a little bit outwards and say, what's going on in the rest of the world? What is there, Sammy, that's something that you feel that the people outside Nigeria should know about Nigeria's history and like its people and its archaeology? What is something that people just maybe don't know about or they get wrong?
Oh, well, there is a lot, you know. Also, if I can remember, lately, people from outside Nigeria that are actually interested in Nigerian archaeology, Nigerian history, heritage, are more about the Benin bronzes I know you're familiar about that. If you're familiar with that, yeah, I believe. So, but like in the colonial era, there have been a whole lot of archaeological expeditions by sometimes non-archaeologists, because like the museum archaeology project we're working on presently in Just Museum, you find out that some of the collectors are engineers or even colonial administrators who are not trained archaeologists, you know. So, but yes, we've had in some cases trained archaeologists like Bernard Fagg, Robert Soper, Aaron York, just to mention a few of them. But now, our teachers actually worked in these areas, like on the Jos Plateau and in northern Nigeria, the Nok village, and, well, the Nok culture spans a large area of land. Yes, it's massive because it spans from even the northern to past the middle belts, where it has become like an assemblage where similar objects, artifacts have been found. But now people are more concerned, the national community of archaeologists are more concerned with more recent stuff like the Benin bronzes, you know, the Ife, you know, and yeah, because they want to put it in parallel with the, what era do you call it in Europe? Is it Renaissance? No, after Renaissance. What do you call that period?
I'm completely blanking on this. I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, so I can't, European archaeologists try to put it in parallel with that. Yes, there's a lot of diversification now in Nigerian archaeology, but like from the outside, this view that we don't do archaeology is actually not true, because since 2019, I've been volunteering for projects, just to go and learn because of my curiosity and do stuff. Yeah. Yes, we do a whole lot of archaeology, but yes, there's more that needs to be learned and there's more that needs to be done. You know, familiarize ourselves with the current trends in the practice of archaeology. It's very important. But then, from coming from the outside world, I think basically the subject matter is about the Benin bronzes. Yeah, it's been on the headline for some few years now. Yeah, and, you know, a lot of talking back and forth. Yeah, so recently I saw that the Oba of Benin has given the Director General of the NCMM like the stewardship of the Benin bronzes, because there was this argument about who owns it, or is it the palace, and stuff like that. But now the Oba has officially given permission to the NCMM, that's the National Commission for Museums and Monuments, to take charge of the objects. So for the international community, it's not just, there's a whole lot more. There's a whole lot more to be discovered. Yeah.
Definitely. And with kind of still thinking about, I'd say, what I would call the international community of archaeologists, like, I like to think that people try and work past borders. And obviously, you've talked about your work where you've traveled to the UK and visit museums, and there's like been work along the different projects you mentioned. But I sometimes feel that, like, from my perspective at conferences and stuff, what is it that the international community of archaeologists could do better when it comes to both supporting Nigerian archaeology and actually archaeology across like the African continent? What could big international organizations do more of to lift up and emphasize and highlight archaeology that's coming out of places like Nigeria?
I think, first of all, I think trained archaeologists are being trained internationally. Trained archaeologists, first of all, to be in tune with the current trends, to have a knowledge of best global practices. That's one. Yeah. Secondly, try to influence decision making here in Nigeria to maybe adopt or maybe copy some laws and modify them to suit the Nigerian need in terms of legislation that would make Nigerian developers to adopt international standards of doing archaeology before. And funny enough, some of the companies that do these development projects are actually the big ones actually not local. They are international mm-hmm. companies. And it beats my imagination whenever I think that, oh, you cannot do this in the UK, you cannot do this in the US, but you can come to, you can do it freely in Nigeria, because you know that before you embark on any development project in the UK or in the US, you have to do archaeology. So, but in Nigeria, you don't do that. So you see, if that space is opened, graduates of archaeology will not only look to go to the classroom. Yeah, there'll be job in construction for them, leverage on and stuff like that. So that now even make archaeology more, you know, appealing mm-hmm. to anybody that wants to study. Because right now I don't think yeah, most especially amongst the young ones, if there's a whole lot of work to be done to be able to convince one to study archaeology. Because what am I going to become at the end of the lecturer? Hell no. A lot of people will tell you they don't want to end up in the classroom. But it's not just the classroom. If we have laws that would mandate developers to do archaeology, it will make them employ archaeologists. Yes. And well, recently, like, I noticed that archaeology has just gone beyond just archaeology. Archaeology done, then what next? What are you going to do with the whole stuff you excavate or you research and stuff like that? So actually, okay, we have to borrow these ideas from internationally because we have not developed any locally. So we have to look at what the international community is doing. How do they communicate the archaeology to a wider audience? Yeah, aside the museum, because who wants to go to the museum? Yeah, not everybody wants to go to the museum, but we should look at how the international community does their things and attracts people to archaeology and maybe copy and modify to suit the Nigerian need. I think that would be lovely. I hope I've answered your question properly.
You have done an amazing about job, so thank you very much.
Okay. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much for all the lessons, and yeah, we'll catch you next time. The moon is clear, misconception you held dear. They told you what you want to hear. Can't you see that the truth will set you free? Expose this honor myth with me.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.